Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Wednesday was Valentine's Day, and the Lakers fans had all their hearts for Rui Hachimura. We'll explain why next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everyone for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. Always free, never behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go hang out with over 23,000 subscribers, all of whom are very excited about the way the Lakers are playing, and also how I discovered if I make hearts, I can actually make hearts appear on our screen. Andy can't do it. Andy's hearts don't look hearty enough. But anyway, it is a really good time, I think, for the Lakers, feeling good about themselves, feeling good about each other. They win on Wednesday heading into the All-Star break. They go into Utah and they win that one. Final score. I was so concerned about my hearts. I've moved off my original screen there.
138-122 was the final
thank score. But, no LeBron James. And there were moments in this game where certainly the Lakers defensively kind of started to lapse. And,
the entire second quarter I referred to as.
Yes, 41 points Utah scored there.
Okay, let me put this in perspective. How bad, because I mean, this is real. Let's just get it out of the way because it's about the only thing you'd criticize from this game. To put in perspective just how bad the Lakers defense was in the second quarter, the Lakers shot 72% in the second quarter, put up 36, and got outscored by 5. Utah shot almost 67% from both the field and behind the arc. Again, the Lakers shot 72% and put up 36 and lost the quarter. Yeah. Like, that requires
Utah finished the game with 15 offensive rebounds. I think 18 of them came in the second quarter.
The second quarter, they were disorganized defensively. It just fell apart. Torian Prince in particular was just getting murdered on screens while trying to navigate covering either Clarkson or Markkanen, both. But it was really everybody. Mm. But then they got it back together in the third and fourth quarter, and they just put this game away decisively.
Yeah, and it was really good to see because, no LeBron James. I understand Utah is sub 500, but they were 17-8 at home coming into this game. And they've got good players. Lauri Markkanen is an all-star caliber player. Colin Sexton's been great this year. John Collins is a decent player. Walker Kessler is very tall. So they're not a terrible team and they're well coached. And this on the second night of a back-to-back is the type of game that, oftentimes, whether it's Denver, whether it's Utah, you go into altitude on the second night of a back-to-back, night before, the All-Star break or whatever it is. This is an easy game to lose. And, to some degree, I wonder if, the absence of LeBron, kind of focuses a team a little bit more. But either way, I don't think that they've been playing really well, regardless of who is in the lineup. This is their third win in a row. This starting lineup is 6-0. They've won 7 of 8. I want to say 8 of 12. I mean, and the one loss in that 7 of 8 was a very narrow loss to Denver while they were missing 4 guys. So, I mean, you got to feel good about where they are.
Yeah, Darvin talked after the game describing this as a good quality of life win, meaning heading into the All-Star break, you don't have like a week to be thinking about how you crap the bed heading into this break. And you mentioned all of those factors that could have led to this being a loss. They also got in at around 3:30 in the morning in Salt Lake. Like, guys probably went to bed at somewhere between 4 and 5.
Well, and after they were done partying.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
yet into 3:30, the clubs are still raging in Salt Lake City. So you got to do that for a couple hours and then you go to bed. Well,
mostly just it was hard to fall asleep because of the noise, just the continual noise in Salt Lake. Yeah. I mean, just everywhere you go, there's people in suspenders with glow sticks and lollipops in their mouths. It's the EDM and MDMA capital of the world.
It's Salt like Senor Foggs.
Oh, yes, but druggier. That's the way. That's the way I think of Salt Lake. But like a lot of guys talked about how this could have been a trap game for the Lakers, and they seem to be in a place right now where they just do not accept that. Like both Rui, we'll talk about Rui and AD. Both of them had fantastic games. D'Angelo Russell had a really, really strong game, but Rui and AD both said different versions of this is who we are. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they're asked about like, you know, are you coming into your own? Like if you discover something, they're both just like, this is who we are. We need to meet who we are essentially. But like, this is the team we not only can be, it's a team we're supposed to be. And I thought that was really interesting how insistent hearing guys talk about it that way.
I think we touched on this. Let's just all the powers that be really make sure that you like, it's important to lead with like the important, like the big story. So let's just talk about Anthony Davis, 37 points, 15 rebounds, 10 of 13 from the line, 13 of 25 from the field, two block shots, Rui Hachimura, 13 of 19, 36 points, 6 of 8 from three-point range, 4 of 5 from the free throw line. So there we go. We've mentioned these guys, and we'll talk about them in more detail in the second segment. But I think what you're talking about is really crucial, because the Lakers have spent a lot of time this season leaning into an identity that looked more like last year. And I think what we're all finding is not that they're going to have to play better defense, and they can play pretty good defense. They've had stretches, particularly, you know, with AD around there, where they really, even in this, you know, while the points are going up, can still lock down for stretches of time. But fundamentally, this is not a 103 to 98 team. Like they're a team that's going to score some points, and they're going to move the ball when they're playing well. They're going to be moving the ball and effectively and things like that. And the defense is going to be hopefully good, but perhaps not elite. And that can happen even while a lot of the players are the same guys from last year. Your identity isn't always going to be exactly the same from year to year, even when your players are similar.
It's interesting. I don't entirely agree with you, just because you're saying this as they're missing a lot of their important defensive players.
True.
So, I mean, in theory, if they have all hands on deck, they should be able to find more of a balance, particularly when you have Jared Vanderbilt mm-hmm. back, who other than AD is the most important defensive player on this team. Fingers crossed he will play again this season, but Cam Reddish has ways that he can help the defense. Max Christie has ways that he can help the defense. You know, I think they have more defensive potential than I think they
should. I'm not saying there's not potential there. I feel like this is a team that is on balance going to be more offensively oriented than defensively. That's really my point.
Maybe. But what I think is interesting about that, though, is Anthony Davis was specifically asked about that after the game, because they headed into this season talking a lot about being a defensively oriented, defensive identity mm-hmm. team. And he was asked if that had changed or shifted over the course of particularly this run, but of this season. And he was very insistent that the answer was no. Mm-hmm. And he said the reason is because you can't control your offense in the same way you can control your defense. He's like, in some respects, the ball won't cooperate offensively at times, no matter what you do, correct or incorrect. But you can always control your defensive effort and your intensity and your communication. You know, obviously that doesn't lead to perfect defense either, mm-hmm. but I think it isn't so much that they're identity, to me at least, because I was thinking about this after AD said this. To me, it isn't even so much that their identity has changed as it is they and we, I think watching them, have discovered just how much easier the game looks when you can actually score. Like, I don't even think it's necessarily that their identity changed as much as it's like they added a skill, and the skill is called scoring. Before they couldn't do it at all.
It's a good point you're making. I want to keep into this because I do think it's critical. Like this notion of them feeling like they understand what they are and are playing at the caliber. And a lot of this actually gets to, the resurgence of D'Lo, the game that Rui had, against Detroit, against New Orleans, where he didn't put up 36 in those games, but he was productive. And so we're starting to see players play to their potential, which allows them to score. So let's keep on this, and we'll talk some Rui and some AD next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Robinhood. And did you know that even if you have a 401k for retirement, you can still have an IRA? Robinhood, it has the only IRA that gives you a 3% boost on every dollar you contribute when you subscribe to Robinhood Gold. But get this, now through April 30th, Robinhood is even boosting every single dollar you transfer in from other retirement accounts with a 3% match. That's right, no cap on the 3% match. And Robinhood Gold gets you the most for your retirement thanks to their IRA with a 3% match. And this offer is good through April 30th. Get started at Robinhood.com/boost. Subscription fees apply. And now here's some legal info. Claim as of quarter one, 2024 is validated by Radius Global Market Research. Investing involves risk, including loss. Limitations apply to IRAs and 401ks. 3% match requires Robinhood Gold for 1 year. From the date of the first 3% match, you must keep Robinhood IRA for 5 years, and the 3% matching on transfers is subject to specific terms and conditions. Robinhood IRA is available to U.S. customers in good standing. Robinhood Financial LLC member SIPC is a registered broker-dealer.
So, our friend Jacob Rude, who we frequently name check on this because of his excellent tweets, has another one that he put out following Wednesday's game. Here's a list of the Lakers teammates score 35 points in the same game. Jerry West and someone named Krebs. I apologize. I don't know who that is. West and Barnett. West and Rudy LaRusso. West and Baylor. West and Chamberlain. Abdul-Jabbar and Goodrich. Magic and Wilkes. Kobe and Shaq. LeBron and AD. To this list, you can now add, and this is, I would think this would be like, if Rui saw this, he would think this is pretty cool. This is basically all Hall of Famers and Krebs and now Rui Hachimura. Anthony Davis and Rui Hachimura on a team as storied as the Lakers to have that kind of night is really impressive. And I think we talked about it a little bit for Wednesday's show. Part of what will allow the Lakers to reach their full capacity and what has allowed them to play better is like they need Rui to be more productive. And we've seen what it looks like over the past three games or so, that what it brings to this team, really since that 2-point game against Denver, he's gone for 21, 15, and now 36. It's been so much better. And the difference is incredible.
Yeah. Just to make sure everybody knows that 36 for Rui is a career high, as well as the 6 3-pointers made in a game, also a career high. Rui talked afterwards about just the comfort that this team has right now with, he mentioned the lineup, but I got the impression he means just everything that comes from this starting rotation and then the rotation that they have moving on from there. We had talked before, I mean, not just with Rui specifically, but when Vanderbilt was an option before the injury, there had been some unhappiness permeating throughout this team, and you got an impression that at least one of the reasons was the guys who were part of last year's Western Conference run didn't feel like they were being given enough opportunity to work together mm-hmm. in concert and just try to recreate as much of last season as you can. You always talk about, Brian, every season's a little bit different, but that doesn't mean some things can't be.
Oh, you're right. Guys can still find, it's a different rhythm. D'Lo and Reeves it's cooking and it's working well. It still looks a little bit different than it did last year.
Sure.
But like that familiarity helps you build and evolve as circumstances change a little bit. Like there's nothing wrong with familiarity.
Right. And you get a sense, too, that guys are happier since Darvin started moving more in this direction, that both from reports and also just hearing guys talk and reading between lines that weren't always that subtle, it's felt like the guys who were part of that run wanted more time together and were unhappy that they weren't getting it. They're now getting it. They're winning more, and they are a much happier group. And, you know, Rui in the meantime was just phenomenal in this game. Like, somebody needed to step up in LeBron's absence that wasn't just Anthony Davis, because that's just what you expect from your best player. And AD, the last time they were in Utah, AD played bad. And he even said, this loss is on me. So
five of 21, I believe he was in that game.
Yeah. So it seemed like he came out looking to make up for that. But Rui got cooking early and just kept going, scoring inside and outside. He was just out muscling a lot of Utah defenders. And he really just, tonight was a reminder of how talented and varied a scorer Rui can be, and a reminder of why I've been bitching since basically last season. Play the guy more. Just play the guy more.
And it will, again, the post All-Star break, Max Christie should be back. Cam Reddish should be back. Vanderbilt probably not quite yet. You know, we're still in that place where Rui is going to be slotted into a lot of minutes because, you know, again, that Denver game where he scored 2 points, still played 38 minutes. Which is part of the reason 2 points stuck out, because they don't have a lot of guys who can do that. But just the nature of this team and, you know, what Rui can bring now, if he's being squared, like, he's there to score, like, more first and foremost, is another guy who can come in and give you points in different ways than some of the other players. You know, D'Lo, 17 assists, career high 17 assists. Austin Reeves had 7 assists. So you're getting 24 assists on the road from your guards. And now you throw in 4 more for Spencer Dinwiddie. Lakers had 34 assists in this game against 9 turnovers. Again, this is a road game where you're going to get a little less credit on those assist calls. And just generally speaking, the ball is really moving around. Like, tonight Utah didn't send Wednesday night a ton of doubles and Anthony Davis. They might perhaps have wanted to consider that. So, you know, he only had 1 assist, but, you know, we've seen, you know, double digit assist games from AD. And when you're getting that from him, and you have LeBron James and you have Austin Reeves and you have, you know, Russell and now Dinwiddie, and, you know, these are really good passers, and you can always have at least 2 of them on the floor. Sometimes you're going to have 3, sometimes you're going to have 4. And that is the Lakers should score a lot of points with that, if they can keep this up and especially keep the turnovers down.
Yeah. You mentioned Dinwiddie. I thought he's looked actually pretty comfortable pretty quickly, all things considered, with this team. But tonight I thought he even looked more comfortable than the debut against Detroit. He had 10 points off the bench, 4-6 from the field, 2-4 from behind the arc, plus the 4 assists and 2 steals. Wanted to make sure to point this out with D'Lo. It wasn't just a career high 17 assists, although that is clearly spectacular.
Yeah.
17 assists against 2 turnovers. That's like Chris Paul level point guarding. Like, that is spectacular work.
Yeah.
That's hard to do.
And I got a little bit of flack on this on the YouTube channel for Wednesday's game, but we were talking about this with Darian on Wednesday, Darian Vaziri, who hosts the Clippers show, which made people mad. But
also hosts the Lakers show, but people seem to ignore that.
That was incidental to the,
yes.
But the there's a difference between, like, Austin Reeves is an excellent passer. Like, we've seen some of the highlight reel of that one in the game, the Detroit game on Tuesday, where he somehow moved the ball backwards, bending his wrist in directions that I'm not entirely sure how that worked. It was like an action figure. And, you know, I think it was to LeBron for a dunk. Like, he is a really good passer. There's a difference, though, between being a passer and a point guard. You know, because it's not just about making the pass. It's also about setting up the offense and reading the defense and getting people organized. Like, and I feel like Reeves is a better passer than he is a point guard. And Russell playing the way that he is allows Reeves to kind of have the most fully realized version of himself too. And like, you know, you add all of those passers to around a guy like Rui who moves well and you know, will cut and will do that stuff. Like it's going to get a lot of easy baskets.
Yeah. When we come back, I want to add one last thought to what you were saying about Reeves, because it got me thinking. I thought you landed on an interesting observation about him that I wanted to just put a button on. Also, another just impressive point about D'Lo before going to the break. 17 assists in this game, according to NBA.com's metrics, he had the fifth highest usage rating on the team, yet still managed to get 17 assists, like the fifth highest among guys who played actual rotation, right, regular minutes that mattered. He had the fifth highest usage. That's it's basically like every time he touched the ball, if he wasn't shooting, he was moving it to somebody who managed to get a basket. Like that's incredible.
It really is. Austin Reeves, by the way, 9 of 13 from the floor, 22 points, 4 rebounds, 7 assists. He had a good game. So there's a lot to like out of this one. So we'll talk a little bit more about this and a little bit more about an interesting story on ESPN involving the Warriors and the Lakers and LeBron James. All that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Hungry Root, and it's the easiest way to get fresh, high-quality food delivered to your door. They've got healthy groceries, simple recipes, all in one place. And as someone who has enjoyed a Hungry Root shipment, let me tell you, you are in for some awesome eating. You just take a fun short quiz so Hungry Root can get to know you, how you like to eat, your favorite flavors, the appliances you use in the kitchen, all that stuff. And they will keep those preferences top of mind and start building your cart with awesome recipes and your grocery needs for a week. Hungry Root has fresh produce, high quality meat and seafood, pantry staples, healthy snacks, sweets, all sorts of stuff. Some of my favorites include the lemon pepper half chicken, the cucumber corn bean salad, great on its own, but you can also mix it into other salads, mix it into other entrees. It's really, really versatile and tastes fantastic. Hungry Root follows a simple recipe. It's got to taste good. It's got to be quick to make. It's got to contain whole trusted ingredients. And right now, Hungry Root is offering Locked On NBA listeners 40% off your first delivery, plus free veggies for life. That's an amazing offer, particularly if you plan to live a long time. Go to hungryroot.com/lockedon to get 40% off your first delivery and get those free veggies again for your long, long life.
That's how you stick it to the man, as you live like exactly, an extra 75 years.
Those fools at Hungry Root.
Powered by your free vegetables.
Yeah. Those fools. That's hungryroot.com/lockedon. Don't forget to use your link so they know we sent you.
So yeah, finish your thought on Reeves.
You had mentioned how he often is a better passer when he's not necessarily running the offense, like in a traditional point guard way. And I thought that's a good observation. And it got me thinking about how Reeves, for all of his image as like, you know, the plucky underdog, undrafted white kid, small town Arkansas, gee whiz, just doing my best to be in the league. Great story.
I'm just an accident daddy.
Yeah. You know? I'm just an accident daddy / lemon daddy. You know,
please get out Reeves there and play some golf when I can.
My farmer's tan. Austin Reeves actually takes a lot of risks while he plays. Like, he's actually a very gambling risk. He is not a risk averse player at all. If anything, sometimes you would wish that he dials it back a bit. And I think it actually makes sense that sometimes he is at his best as a passer when he's in these sort of scenarios where it, for better or for worse, it's meant to be more chaotic. Like, I think it brings the best out in him. Like, sometimes I think if it's simpler, he tries to do a little bit more than is necessary because he's just kind of a risky player.
Here's how I would put it. Austin Reeves, the human, He is confident. He is all the, which he deserves to be. He is in the NBA. He just played for the US in the World Cup. It's like, it's really good at basketball. He should be confident in his, but he doesn't seem like an arrogant person. He has, his game is very arrogant.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of arrogance in Austin Reeves' floor game. Like there, you know, in the sort of the audacity of the shots, in the types of things, you know, the contact that he draws, the way he does it, some of the passes he makes, you know, some of the threes that he'll hoist, and that's how he plays. Like it's a swagger, it's an arrogance or whatever, that if he was not a sort of like, I know we spent a lot of the preseason talking about how like Austin Reeves is, you know, he's put on muscle and gained weight and all these other things. He still looks like a noodle armed kind of guard version of Nikola Jokic in some ways, sort of. But if he didn't look like that, if he was built more like, you know, like some sort of like basketball straight casting, central casting, I should say, we'd probably describe him differently in many ways. But there's a tremendous arrogance to how he plays in the best way that player, you know, a lot of stars have. I think that's just kind of who he is.
It is. But I think in some respects, it leads to the chances that he takes. And sometimes mm-hmm. those chances turn out fantastic. Sometimes they lead to trying to strip Nikola Jokic from behind and leaving Michael Porter Jr.
really open in
a 5-point game with a minute left, hypothetically speaking.
Asking for a friend,
but that is
why when you ask him to play point guard, it's not that he can't do it, but it puts him in a box that I think limits some of that stuff that makes him kind of special and the freedom and the whoa, what was that kind of stuff. When you give him all that responsibility, and it's like you're taking the guy and buttoning him down, putting him in a corporate job, and like it's like, don't do that to him. Free Austin.
There are times where I feel like Austin will look to be creative with what he's doing when creativity is not necessary.
Sure.
Just go make a play. Again, for better or for worse, because there are times when he will throw some really creative passes or make some creative moves in the lane. Like, I'm not saying this as a criticism entirely of Reeves, but it just, the way you described it got me thinking.
Yeah.
Kind of about who he is as a player and why I thought your observation made sense.
Yeah, thank you. Sometimes panache, as you say, sometimes panache is not required.
No.
So I had a really interesting conversation with Jackson Gatlin, the host of Locked On Rockets, who also hosts the Locked On NBA show. I think like 3 days a week, doesn't he? This is like a couple days a week, at least. I think it's three. Where we were just talking off air during this sort of time of discontent getting towards the deadline about LeBron, and like what kind of, just like hypothetically, how could you trade LeBron? Not like would you, like not a how could you trade LeBron, like literally how could, like what kind of deal could you construct? And one of the teams that we sort of thought about that was like maybe it could work here were the Golden State Warriors. You're like, you know, they've got some decent young players. You know, LeBron would probably agree to go there if he was really upset. The idea of playing with Steph would be kind of cool. It's a great organization and so on and so on and so forth. Maybe they could put a package together with Kuminga and, you know, Moody and, you know, Pods and Pajimski and, you know, whoever it is. And we're like, yeah, it's probably not going to happen. But lo and behold, Andy, on Wednesday, Ramona Shelburne and was it Woj at ESPN had a story out about how Joe Lacob, in fact, and the Golden State Warriors kicked the tires on a LeBron deal. So Jackson and I were apparently ahead of the game.
Yeah, I mean, and I want to save some of this discussion for Friday's show.
Sure.
Just so we can really unpack it, and also because there's no games going on, so we need things to talk about.
We're going to talk real slow between now and next Thursday.
But, you know, as a bit of an appetizer, and actually for folks unaware, I did a crossover episode with Cyrus over at Locked On Warriors. We just spontaneously decided to do a show. We got into some of the particulars with this and some in this case, Warriors' perspective on it. You mentioned like Joe Lacob reaching out. You know, this was sparked in some ways, facilitated in some ways by Draymond Green, who is part of, you know, the Clutch Familia, which, you know, creates some pipelines and things like that. But it's interesting that Lacob talked with Jeannie Buss, and Jeannie Buss made it clear, we have no intention of trading LeBron, like, period, full stop, unless LeBron wants to be traded. If he wants to be traded, assuming we can find a deal that is suitable, we will honor our superstar's wishes, because that's the type of organization we strive to be. But you're going to have to talk to his reps to see if this is something he's interested in. And apparently they got a pretty fast no, and that was the end of it. But it's interesting just to see Jeannie put some of this decision directly in LeBron's hands, whether that's confidence in the answer that I think she wanted, which was, I don't want to be traded, or just, this is the ethos that we feel like we need to be in order to maintain a reputation, or a little bit of both, that this was in part more LeBron's decision than anybody else's, I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. And look, I mean, I know I got a couple messages, not like I'm doing like the reporting, but people just like reaching out, they saw the story and they're like, oh wow, what do you think about this? Like friends of mine. And you know, a couple of them were like, I can't believe like Jeannie was just like, go ask Rich Paul. I'm like, no, that's like how this is supposed to work. Like, no, but like, hey, I mean, you reach out to him. It's like it's not our choice to say that LeBron is happy or unhappy. And you know, it's an interesting dynamic. We'll get into more of this tomorrow for how you look at next season. You know, this idea that, you know, somehow not getting a Royce O'Neal or something. I keep using him both as a literal and a figurative representative of what they didn't do at the deadline is really going to fundamentally impact LeBron in one way or another for the choice he's going to make. He understands what this organization is trying to do and either believes in it and or doesn't, or believes in it enough that he doesn't want to leave his family for, you know, for a year, you know, towards the end of his career and all that stuff. So I also think it's like just fascinating, like the notion of like how difficult it is to trade LeBron, like to come up with a deal. Cause if you're the team that's getting him, on the one hand, it's LeBron. He's still elite. He's still all NBA, probably second team. I would think, you know, something like that.
He was third last year. So he's probably
last year with injuries. Right. If he plays most of the season this year, if he plays 65 games, you know, to qualify, right. It's the threshold. If he clears the threshold, he's probably second, you know, or even he's third. That's still really good.
Yeah.
Like you on the one hand want to kind of empty the cupboard for him because he's LeBron, but you can't because, you know, definitionally talking about a year, 2 years. So like what the Lakers can get reasonably and what the return is and whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. Trying to construct a trade with Golden State is an interesting exercise. So,
yeah. One thing I mentioned with Cyrus and then we'll go, it also becomes doubly complicated because Anthony Davis is in his prime. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, while he's not at the end of his prime, he's not at the beginning of it either. So you don't have time to reset anything.
No.
Like if you were to do this deal, you would need to do it in a way that makes you feel, if maybe not as competitive as you are with LeBron, because LeBron's LeBron, you still need to feel really competitive.
There's got to be something to it.
Options.
Yeah, for sure. And look, I mean, with the last, you know, post Boston has shown is that there is still reason to believe in this group. You know, Lakers have played very good basketball. They haven't moved anywhere in the standings because the Western Conference is a brutal, brutal place. But the quality of the basketball is such that you can look at them and, you know, if they continue to play like this, whether they end up as a 9-8, a 7-6 or a 5, because they're not going higher than the 5. You can believe that they can beat any team in the West. And so that's where you want to be. It's what makes this fun we just want something to believe in, Andy. Mm-hmm. Congratulations to Rui for his excellent day with all the hearts. And congratulations to LeBron, LeBron had nothing to do with this, but to Anthony Davis and to the Lakers for heading into the break on a high note and making everybody feel a little bit better. We will talk more about this, talk about what to expect coming out of the break, get you ready for the post All-Star tomorrow. See everyone tomorrow.